Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Bantha Fodder, episode 23. I'm Mike Amate.
I'm Jacob Tender.
And we're back with part two of our... what are we calling this one? Like our October or fall fan edit festival?
Fantastic fan film fantasy.
Okay, I like fantasy better. Fantasia?
Yeah, we're watching fan edits. We're watching two fan edits, and that's... and calling it a festival, a fantasy.
And last episode we covered Heir to the Force. Is that what it's called?
Yeah. Last time we reviewed Heir to the Force, Force Awakens edit, that I think we actually named correctly twice in that episode.
No, that was bad.
I mean, to be fair, in the Star Wars universe, like, everything is something to the something or something of the something. So
I called it Heir to the Jedi. That's what I called it.
I think I called it Heir of the Force, not Heir to the Force. I don't know. Sorry, my apologies to Dig. Our joined apologies to Dig for that.
What should we call Dig now that we're in contact with Dig? Should we call Dig Digmod or Dig Modification?
They signed their DM back to us.
Digmod.
Did they sign a Digmod?
Digmod, yeah. So I think that's what we're going to be referring. So Dig Modification is the editor of these fan edits that have showed up on, what is it, fanedit.org? Are we allowed to say that?
No, you can say that. You can't say where I actually downloaded it from.
Oh, okay, I see. Got it. All right.
Fanedit.org is like an awesome database of fan edits in general, not just Star Wars, but like all kinds of fan edits. OriginalTrilogy.com was a website that was originally founded around basically saying, hey, like, George Lucas, can you please put out the original trilogy unedited? And from there, that's where like a bunch of these like fan edit projects started. So those are two really great resources, but it's not where you actually download this stuff.
I see. Okay, cool. Good to know. So anyway, Digmod is kind of our subject for this next few episodes. And I'm hoping that we get a third one out of this where we get to actually talk to Digmod.
We've been in touch, and it sounds like they are interested, so I'm kind of excited for that. Once we finish this one up, I think we should get some stuff prepared and send that over to him so we're not blindsiding him with notes. Like, why did you do this?
Gotcha, journalism. That's what we're known for at Bantha Fodder. Just some good old-fashioned surprise.
Some gonzos over here. Yeah, we'll give him a good heads up. But look out for that. That should be fun. He's been really fun to interact with on Twitter, or they have. We still don't know their gender, which is interesting and fun. So maybe we'll figure that out next time. I don't know if they're going to request any kind of like vocal effects. Do you have any of that in your Logic toolkit, just in case?
Oh, yeah, I do. I'm a master editor here.
But anyway, I feel very self-conscious now, because I know that Digmod is listening, which is very, I feel flattered, you know, really, that Digmod would listen to us. It's really...
Well, no, thank you to Digmod, for kind of taking part and sharing our episode. That was really cool. I saw, some incoming links coming in from FanEdit and Original Trilogy, they've been sharing it, which is neat. So, last episode we did Heir to the Force. This time we are going to do a Rogue One edit that Digmod put together called Rise of the Rebellion.
Yeah. Overall feelings, right? I mean, going into this, I think I mentioned it last week when we were talking, because I initially watched the first probably 8 minutes of Rise of the Rebellion. Before the stream cut out or something like that.
Right.
And, so I switched over to the Force Awakens edit. But I was really enjoying it. Like, I knew from the first 8 minutes of this edit that I would enjoy it more, if not equal to, or if not more than the original Rogue One. That's how I felt going into it. And that was purely based off of an opening crawl, which I was not like a stickler for. Like, I was okay with it not being in Rogue One, but once it was added in, I was like, oh, this feels way better. This feels right, you know?
Yeah, no, I get that. Yeah, I had positive reactions to just about the entire thing. I thought it was a pretty good edit. I don't know if it's even worth comparing it to The Force Awakens, and maybe if it is, we'll save that for the end. But mm-hmm. just kind of like looking at the goals of this edit and how it differed from what they were trying to achieve with the Force Awakens edit that they did. Mm-hmm. I think they did a really great job sticking to that. And I think that the stakes were lower on this one, which worked to its benefit. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. I didn't read any of the release notes for this going into it. I wanted to watch it without like looking or like specifically looking for specifics that had been edited. I wanted to like see if there was stuff I noticed, see if there's stuff I didn't notice. And I think it was a lot of what I mentioned last episode where we were just saying like, you know, you catch yourself thinking like, oh, was this edited or was it not edited? And, you know, like thinking that like dialogue had been shifted around when in actuality, it was just the original stuff again. Like it was just, I was watching the real movie in that moment, but my brain was telling me it had been edited.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. I totally get that feeling this time through. I was kind of like, I was watching it while I was preparing these notes. So I was, you know, sort of inadvertently looking at the cuts and additions that DigMod had made while watching it, which was interesting because there's a lot of things like kind of looking through the parts that I had already watched that I totally missed, which is good, I think. So this one should be interesting because I think I'm less familiar with Rogue One to begin with. I think I've seen The Force Awakens probably like 6 or 7 times now outside of theaters. And I think Rogue One I had only watched one time before, maybe when it first hit Netflix a couple months ago. So brief synopsis. All this stuff got sourced from fanedit.org and originaltrilogy.com. I kind of made some highlights to distill down exactly what it is that they were trying to achieve. Primarily, Rise of the Rebellion seeks to restore heroes to the movie by slightly shifting their motivations and actions to produce a story that is filled with brave heroes and less distractions. They consider this release a light fan fix rather than a fan edit. And I don't really know the semantics of what that means, but I think basically, you know, it's just minor tweaks. You're not adding a whole lot. You're not taking out a whole lot. It's not drastically reducing length. It's just sort of switching up maybe the order of things or kind of pulling out tiny things here and there that focus the movie towards a certain goal. That's kind of like the gist of it. And to do this, their objectives were to add a crawl, remove the planet cards, rescore a couple of scenes here and there, and then kind of change the characters up a little bit. And this is where I think it really got interesting. He wanted to make Chirrut less kung fu, Bodhi more calm and a little more confident, and he wanted to make Cassian's demons internal, as well as reducing Saw Gerrera to more of like a Lor San Tekka kind of character.
That's the old man at the beginning of The Force Awakens that gets a lightsaber through the body.
Yep, that's the guy.
Okay, just making sure everybody's keeping up with us at home.
So that was that. I think the only other thing that I think I need to add to this top of this is that there are two versions of this edit out there. The version that we watched is the most recent version, which is called No Mo Intro, which is named after one of the forum members who made a request to remove both the Cassian and Bodhi introductions to kind of like follow Jin through Yavin first. So this edition actually cuts out some more stuff from the beginning of the movie, and I think it works more towards the goals. But yeah, so just, if anybody is watching along, No Mo Intro is the one that we are talking about tonight.
Cool. I mean, we could just start right at the beginning, I think, with that, you know, I mean, the original theatrical cut of Rogue One, you have the long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. And then that orchestral hit right there, and it goes right to the planet, right? Is that what happened?
I think it does one of those like star spins down to ships, right?
It reminded me like a Batman spin in the original theater, you know, like that's what it reminded me of in the original cut. But this one just, you know, was the Star Wars theme, you know, the logo scrolling backwards, the title card scrolling backwards, and then a crawl, which we got, you know.
Yeah, and we don't get the crawl in the original version, something that we've talked about multiple times on this show.
Yeah, and with the idea that being that, you know, Kathleen Kennedy and kind of Disney's stance on the crawl in Rogue One was that they're, you know, this is supposed to be different than the episodic films. But when you look at everything else that's happened in Star Wars since the beginning, and granted, since before Disney took control, but there's been a crawl in all most video games that have come out with Star Wars have featured a crawl. The comic books have had crawls. It just seemed weirder to not have it looking at it now when it's featured in there.
And you know what? Watching this, I didn't even think about it. Like, really? It didn't even cross my... Yeah, like, I knew I should have been watching for it, but when I started watching this edit, I was in bed. I was tired. And I'm like, well, I'm gonna get started, get it going. And this is a couple of weeks ago, but when I started watching it, you know, the crawl just started. I'm like, oh, okay.
And, you just thought you just assumed that nothing had changed.
I was just watching a Star Wars movie, man. I wasn't even thinking about it being Rogue One and, you know, not having a crawl. I was just putting on Rogue One, a Star Wars movie, and there's the crawl. Okay, reading the crawl, and then here starts the movie. And I didn't even think about it.
That's so crazy.
I know, it's weird. But I think that kind of speaks to how well it works. I mean, it fits.
So the crawl happens, and we do the pan down in typical Star Wars fashion. I like that a lot. Mm-hmm. And I think we see some of Digmod's digital effects, I guess, in this case, right?
His chops.
They're chops.
Because the pan down from the credits was actually like a custom pan, and it comes down to like Krennic shuttle. So good job.
Yeah, it was pretty seamless. You know, like I think for not being ILM, it was totally tolerable and enjoyable. And then we get kind of, I think, what was already in the film with the Krennic shuttle passing through the rings of the planet, and just everything kind of proceeded as normal from there, right?
Yeah, pretty much. I think everything proceeded as it does in the normal film up to the point where Jyn hides in the cave.
What was changed in that scene then?
Well, in the cave, she, you know, she like lifts up that secret hiding rock, and she climbs down the little ladder, and she's kind of hiding out. And in the original movie, that's when Saw Gerrera makes his debut.
Right. His head pokes in through the tunnel. Like, I found you, you know, like, here I am.
Right. And essentially, they let the movie roll up to the point where Saw appears, and then it does a jump cut, and she wakes up in the jail cell, which I thought was really cool. I mean, I think it worked before
seeing Saw.
Well, I like the jump waking up thing, you know, kind of, I like when there's like a flashback and then it jumps to present day and they're waking up. It's a pretty, it's a common transition, but I like it, and it works really well in a lot of cases. And I think it worked better here without having Saw there. Just because of how, like, she's hiding there, you know, she's a kid, she's hiding. It has all this, like, tension, and you can kind of, like, feel something mounting as the camera is, like, looking up. And so rather than, like, having the camera looking up the, like, tunnel that she crawled down, and having that, like, music mounting, and then having it open up, and you kind of get that, like, release of energy and seeing Saw there, and then you do the jump cut where she wakes up.
Yeah.
Instead, it just, that jump, like, it swells, and then she wakes up because the thing dropped on her face.
One thing that I was thinking about, like, okay, what's the purpose of cutting Saw's face out looking down there?
Well, I think the idea is to have as little of Saw in the movie as possible.
But for what purpose, though? I mean, like, that's the goal, like, that's the method, but, like, why cut out Saw? So, do we want to make it seem like Jyn was not rescued by Saw in that moment? Or do we want to make it seem, or just to minimize the importance of Saw, like, just make Saw less of an important character in it, because I saw it as the first of those two things. Like, I saw maybe the possibility of having, what if Jyn was discovered by the Empire? I mean, I guess then they would have just locked her up and her father would have known she was alive. So it wouldn't have made much sense in the edit. I was thinking of it being like, well, what if the Empire found her, and that's, you know, then she ends up in a cell. But it's difficult because, again, we're working with fixed source material here, so you can't make these story changes, because if you make it so the Empire found Jyn in that cell and not Saw, then what are you going to do with, like, all of the scenes later when we're talking about how Jen was like frolicking with Saw, you know, like going off on missions, sure, and rebellion stuff, you know.
Well, that's why I think it doesn't matter that you know, that Digmod could take that out of this particular scene, because when you see Saw later, you get that little bit of background, and essentially you get everything that you need from Saw's character as it pertains to this movie in that scene. You don't need him in the flashback. You don't need him saying peekaboo. Like, you get later on that she was kind of like taken in by Saw at some point and then abandoned. Like, all of the, like, I guess, like, all of the ties and all of the emotional connections between these two characters get explained at that point. So everything is let out. Like, I was with you. You were the best I had in my group, you abandoned me, we kind of had to, like, you were fine, you were going to be safe. Like, all of that is explained later on in the movie, didn't need to be there early on. So that's why I think it works, and I think that the edit kind of, the edit, editing him out and then also editing out the Cassian and Bodhi scenes also, I think that's probably how it was laid out in the original movie. I can't recall, but anyway, going from the cave to her waking up in the cell, I think that really worked.
Right. Yeah, I agree.
What was next? I guess title cards, because I think there was one of those in that scene. I think the first one was in that scene where we kind of meet Cassian Andor in the original film, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so it kind of gives that title card on, like, what planet they're on. And, like, these were not necessary. I remember thinking that in the theater when I first saw the movie. I'm like, that's kind of weird, right?
It made me think of Guardians of the Galaxy, you know, when they go to the different locations there and different planets, and
yeah,
they have to give title cards for each location.
It's a bit much. It's just kind of on the nose, because, like, I mean, in Guardians, I really don't think it's necessary. I mean, maybe some people are as nerdy about Guardians of the Galaxy as people are about Star Wars, and they want to know what all the planet titles are called and, like, know where everything takes place, but in Star Wars, that works because it's just kind of slipped in there. We're not, you know, you're not, like, pushing it in anybody's face that, you know, this is Sullust. No, it's just like they offhandedly mention Sullust once in a movie, and that's about that.
Yeah, I think it's difficult. Like, I can see saying that you want to separate the episodic films from the Star Wars stories by, like, stylistic differences, like the crawl and things like that. I can see that kind of differentiation, but the idea of, like, title cards being necessary in one movie and not necessary in the other, don't really, those are not inclusive, like, in set, like, you stylistically, like, I don't know, like, we never got, like, a Coruscant intro, you know, like, we never,
I mean, I guess not, like, you kind of get, like, I think I know what you mean. I mean, you kind of get, like, the introduction when Anakin first steps off onto that pad, and, you know, he's in this gigantic city. And, you know, it's kind
but
of like
no,
overwhelming.
There's no title
but there's
card,
no,
though.
Yeah, yeah, there's no title card.
But the dialogue.
Although they may say, like, welcome to Coruscant, you know, because it is the prequels.
So it's difficult in that respect, because again, we're working with source material, and they didn't include that in Rogue One. But should they have included in Rogue One? I don't think there's a way to do it without seeming silly about it, you know? Like,
yeah.
Like, there's no way to just suddenly be on, I don't know, like, what was one of the planets they panned to? Whatever the one that Cassian ends up on at the beginning. Like, it doesn't matter what planet he's on. And
it really doesn't. And you know what? I don't think that scene matters at all.
Well, I guess that brings us to our next thing, which is that scene getting cut, you know? Like,
yeah,
no Cassian.
That's probably my favorite thing about the entire edit, actually, is the Nomo intro version where they cut out that first scene with Cassian, and he's, like, meeting up with that person that has information, and then he kills that person, and it's supposed to, like, add something to his character. And I think we talked about this when we first saw the movie, and I think maybe you argued that it did add something, but I still don't see it, because I think what you're supposed to get out of that is, like, he's going to do, you know, whatever it takes to see things through. But, like, he didn't need to shoot that guy. Like, he didn't have to.
Well, he didn't need to, or you didn't want him to, I think, because I honestly,
no, I don't
think,
care either way, but, like, I don't think his character needed,
no, you,
to. I don't think
you
that there's
do.
Any
you absolutely
no.
do. You need to see him murder that spy in order to know what he's capable of later on.
Calm down. Calm down. We'll be all right.
Which is why it's important when he doesn't kill Jen's father, when he doesn't kill Galen, when he has a chance at sniper scope. Like, if he's such a cold-blooded killer, then if he doesn't, if you don't see him kill that person early on, just like totally without thinking, you know, then it doesn't mean anything when he spares Galen. I know Galen eventually dies anyway, but like it doesn't mean anything.
I don't see him as a cold-blooded killer though, because like in the part where that rebel general is explaining to him what he needs to do, like you can see that he's like irritated and he has a hesitation. Like he was just given this task that he doesn't want to perform. And I think when you actually get to that shot where, you know, he's like looking through the scope and he's aiming at Galen's head, you know, I think the turn where he decides, no, I'm not going to do it, speaks more to his relationship with right and wrong and Jin as well. I think that if you have that in mind as what's kind of like guiding his decision making in that moment, it's more powerful than him just like deciding, no, I'm not going to be a killer anymore for no reason. Because then when he like is arguing with Jin back in the ship, it would just like walk it back.
Well, I don't think it walks it back, because I think in the ship with Jin, he's just as puzzled as he's like trying to figure out why he hesitated in that moment. I think, you know, he's recounting all the things, like the fighting he's done. Like someone who started fighting when he was a child shouldn't have a problem pulling the trigger after he's given those orders. And that's what I think the real issue is here, is that there's a problem with the source material. Which I've kind of held that contention since I saw Rogue One, is that like, and I think many other critics of this, much more esteemed than myself, have been upset with the characterization of a lot of these people. Because like, I think it would have made way more sense to make Cassian a dick the whole time. Like an unlikable dick is kind of what I wrote in my notes. Like that's what Cassian should have been in Rogue One, which would have made his actions at the end of the film where he decides to help Jin even better. So, I mean, what this relates to in the scene that we're talking about is just that, like, he needs to... I think there should be more of Cassian being non-passionate and, like...
Sure. I think I get what you're saying. You're saying that if, you know, given the source material that we have, because that's all we can, like, really talk about as it pertains to this edit, you think it would have been better, at least for you, if he would have edited out more of the compassionate moments.
Right.
Okay.
But I mean, like you're talking about like I don't know. It depends what you get rid of. Like if you, I guess I hear what you're saying is that, yeah, you can cut out the lacking of compassion, or you can cut out the conflict he feels when he's being told and like how he's concerned about having to kill Galen. But I don't think it makes sense to make him a likable person until the very end. Otherwise,
I think the moment where he doesn't shoot Galen is a big turn. And I think it's a big turn whether you have that scene in the beginning or not. I think, you know, you kind of get the feeling for who Cassian is, because he's, you know, he's goal oriented there. He's there to do a job. He's
not
very
really.
Much like, that's how why don't you think so?
Well, cause what else do you see him do besides that? You know, like Rogue One is lacking severely in character motivation and just characters in general. But
well it's not lacking characters, it's lacking in like character exposition, because there are so many characters.
Those are plot devices, those aren't characters. Like that's what he is. And when you take away things that like make him a certain type of human, like it's good that he shows compassion, but there needs to be a transformation in that character for me to care about them. And that's why I think that murder in the beginning is so important, because you see that he's a killer. We can go back and forth on this point a lot. I think we should probably keep it moving, but I definitely see where you're coming from on that, and I want you to know that I respect your opinion and I cherish you. And as a
don't
co-host,
high road me.
No, I'm serious. I'm serious. I get that you can take out one or the other, and either way you have a character that is one way or the other. But I think the more interesting Cassian is the one who is a piece of shit the whole entire movie and then comes around at the end when he sees something transformed, or like when the Force touches him in a special way on that rainy planet that I don't remember the name of.
I think it's easier to take out the moments where he's a stone cold killer in this movie, just from how many scenes there are with Cassian and which ones actually need to be there for the plot. I think taking out that first scene is an easy choice, and I think it works towards Digmod's goal of making him more heroic rather than the reluctant hero, or however you would spin that.
Absolutely. No, that makes sense. If you're trying to get rid of the anti-hero, if you're trying to shy away from an unlikable person as one of the main characters in your film, that makes sense to get rid of him killing somebody in the beginning.
Oh, there's plenty of unlikable characters in this film.
Okay, well, we'll get to those people.
Next was Bodhi. The Bodhi thing that they cut, which is, I think, fine. I think everything that they cut from Bodhi was totally fine. No more Borg Gullet.
I f***ing hate the Borg Gullet.
Borg Gullet. Borg Gullet.
I mean, like, I think it's an interesting concept, but, like, I think, like, how they used it in just, like, those really quick cutaway scenes to this character that we don't know or really care about yet, it was just kind of strange.
Or the fact that there's no consequence to the Borg.
Yeah, there's really, like, there's no lasting effect.
We don't need Bodhi's intro, because we know that they're going to find a pilot. They're looking for a pilot. So we don't need to have this guy getting escorted to find Saw Gerrera. We don't. And, like, the way that Digmod's version of it, where they happened upon him in the next cell, it just makes sense. Like, I didn't feel lost. Yeah. I didn't feel like... And again, this is, again, you're trying to trick your brain into not recognizing characters and to being like meeting these people for the first time. But really, like, I didn't feel like it would have been that much of a stretch to just turn to the next cell. And they go, "Are you the pilot?" And he just looks up. He's like,
"I'm the pilot." Okay.
Digmod cut it right where he comes back. Which is weird enough already, because the Borg Gullet was supposed to, like,
make you crazy.
Yeah, and, like, never come back from it. But then suddenly it takes, like, maybe 15 seconds for him to come back from it just by being called the pilot. So Who knows? Maybe the Force acted on him.
Well, it changes the way that the movie kind of is set up, because, you know, you kind of get these tropes in movies with lots of characters. And in some of them, you know, like this one, initially, you have, like, your main characters, and then you have these, like, side characters, and then they, like, they're all, like, working towards the same geographic location, and eventually they meet up. Whereas in this edit, you have these characters that slowly pick up more characters as they go along on their journey, on their mission.
Right.
And I think that is almost always better.
Yeah.
So yeah, they cut Bodhi, which is fine. I love Riz Ahmed to death, but his character was completely underdeveloped and really not very compelling.
We talked about Saw briefly earlier. What changes do you think came to Saw's character besides being in it less?
In the original movie, he's just like freaking weird. You know, he's nuts, but he's just really weird. And you still got some of that from this one, but it's definitely more of a direct conversation. He's less, like, distracted or, like, insane. He's just sort of, like, eccentric, I guess. Like, it makes the point that, you know, he is a rebel in a way, but he's not part of the main group. And that's kind of the end of it, which I think is as much as there needed to be. He's not so much, like, the psychotic that he was that... in the original movie with all the Borg Gullet stuff and just his overall craziness. So I think it works better. I think it fits more with his character from the Catalyst prequel book. Overall, total improvement.
I think it's tough when you try to make it, 'cause essentially what was the goal, to make him less of a character or
make him more of like a, just more of a mysterious character. 'Cause up through the whole movie, like, he's mentioned and, you know, like, Saw is who they need to find, but you don't really know who he is. And, like, I think having that mystery in most cases is good. This is, you know, something that improved the Force Awakens edit, in my opinion, with Kylo Ren. And I think it worked for Saw here too, because I think the less you have of what they gave us for Saw, the better.
Yeah, I just think, like, if we want Lorsan Tucka,
get that.
I don't think we do either, but I don't think that they're the same. But I think we could get that. You know, that's what I'm saying, is if we want Lorsan Tucka is given to us, like, he comes into the movie, he's on screen for a total of, like, 5 minutes maybe, and then he's dead. You know, he's brought into our view and out of our view in 5 minutes. We get everything we need from him. And I do think Saw could be that if we made him less important to the other characters in it. You know, like...
Yeah.
It's fine if we can get a little bit of how Jin ran with him, But, you know, like, the whole, like...
Did you come here to kill me?
He still gets that line in this edit, doesn't he?
Yeah, I think that... I wish they were taking that out, because that's what I was talking about. Like, there's still a little bit of that, like,
right.
crazy weirdo left
yeah.
in him.
Yeah. So, like, he didn't need to be a crazy weirdo. He could have just been, like, a rebellion leader like you see him in the Clone Wars, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I guess I do like to see what war has done to this character and, like, age as well and whatever medical condition he's in. Like, it's definitely nice to see how he's degraded over mm-hmm. time if you're familiar with his character in the Clone Wars and Rebels. But it as far as this movie goes, I don't think it helped at all to see him nutso, if that makes any sense.
No, it does. And, like... One question I'm kind of looking forward to asking Dig about this particular is how he related, you know, what he was trying to do to get him to be closer to Laura Senteca, because really what you have is you have two older people that are somehow tied in with the rebellion. They have their own little communities and they have like digital information that's important to the plan. And I think as far as the, like, the connections between those two characters go, that's it. Those are really the only similarities. I don't know if Dig Mod was trying to go for kind of, like, the more sane and wizened
mm-hmm.
version of this character that could possibly exist in some other universe, but I don't think it got there, but I do think it kind of brought the character to a closer level of sanity that I'm comfortable with.
Got it, yeah. A little side note here, another Rogue One kind of question. What was Saw going to do with Galen's message?
Yeah, that's a good question. He's just like, oh, I have this.
I have this really important thing that describes exactly what's going on in the Empire. I mean, I get that Saw is like a super paranoid person and probably doesn't want to leave Jeddah and is kind of just doing what he can for the city. But like, is he just going to sit on this thing? You know, like...
Yeah, and like it's amazing to me that there's such a Imperial presence there, and he uh-huh. lives basically just on the outskirts of town, and that's far away enough that all these like TIE fighters flying around don't do anything about it. You know what I mean? Like
yeah.
They've been causing trouble in Jeddah for a while apparently, and yet they're completely safe to live in these rocks within eyesight of town.
Yeah, I mean, there's a million little things I want to poke holes in Rogue One about, but yeah. I mean, what other changes do we got here?
Well, they took out Dr. Avazin and Ponda Baba, which
Pundu Boo.
Ponda Baba, and I think anybody who listens to this show knows that I probably wasn't gonna be very into that, and I was not.
Yeah, I'm okay with it.
those are my boys. Took out my boys.
Yeah, everybody go listen to episode 15 if you're wondering how much Jake loves Dr. Avazin and Ponda Baba. He loves them so much he wrote a holiday themed poem about them. And it's a quick listen. Go listen to it.
Yeah, they came out. I think we need more Ponda Baba in just about every movie. But
We definitely don't. Absolutely not. Cheers, Dig Mod. Cheers, Dig Mod. Hard cheers on that one. Yeah, it's good that I don't know. The fan service I think we could all have done without. It makes it more of the movie that I want it to be, and literally all that matters is what I want. So that's it.
Fair enough. Whatever you say, Mike. I got a little bit of Ponda Baba in the Blue Harvest Family Guy special that I watched this afternoon.
Oh yeah, it's the whole thing where like they kind of they make him a sympathetic character, right?
Not in that one. That's in Robot Chicken.
Oh, okay.
They make him sympathetic in Robot Chicken, I think.
I get my parody Star Wars cartoons / claymation stuff very confused.
It's okay. In every single one of those Family Guy specials, they talk about Seth Green for like 5 or 6 minutes. What else? I guess the last big thing in Jeddah was how much they took out for Chirrut and Baze.
I didn't notice it.
Yeah, I didn't notice it, and it's awesome.
I definitely felt like there was less of them. I mm-hmm. sensed something different from what I'd seen originally, like the amount of time that I was getting with these characters, but I didn't feel like I was missing anything.
Yeah, I mean, I think they just kind of took out some of the cheese. Maybe not enough, because really, like... look, I know that these actors are very good, but like, really, I'm surprised that they put to print the takes that they did.
Are you talking about like the "Are you kidding me?" line?
Well, no, they did, they took that out. But I mean, like,
I like
even
that.
Even the one, the lines that were left in this thing, you know, like,
no Jedi here anymore, only dreamers like this fool.
The delivery is just like, it's bad, and it doesn't mesh with the delivery for a lot of their other lines. So Baze has a couple of bad lines. Earlier on, Chirrut has a couple of really poorly delivered lines, in my opinion. They don't work for me, and you can't take them out without like completely eliminating their characters. But
I think the action was the big selling point of Rogue One, besides it being Star Wars. So removing like Chirrut's stuff, like his mm-hmm. his kung fu stuff, I don't think that really needed to happen. But you know,
no, well, I agree.
I didn't notice it also, you know, until yeah. looking like I did not look at these notes before watching it. And now looking over these notes of the edits, you know, I didn't miss it.
It doesn't like really change the character much, because I think you kind of just like get the
that
vibe.
He's a tough dude, you know. And he's blind. I missed the comedy of.
Are you kidding me? I'm blind.
I get that it was like kind of a weird comic relief moment that kind of takes you out of it, but that's the point mm-hmm. of comic relief, you know.
It's I guess. I don't know. I was fine with that one, but I get what you mean. Like I was listening for that one. That was like the one thing I was like, okay, this is definitely not going to be in here and it certainly wasn't.
Is this right about the time we meet Vader?
That's a little bit later on. I did want to just mention like the color corrections throughout the movie.
Sure.
There is a little bit of that with Vader, but like we talked about Tarkin before in that mm-hmm. scene. That's the first time we get to see some of the color correction that Digmod did for this movie.
Yeah.
And I don't know. Did you notice anything?
I didn't. No, but I'm also colorblind, so it doesn't okay. really help in these scenarios.
Where does yellow fall in your colorblind?
I can see, I can see most colors. It's just red and green. It's like the most boring, I guess you could call it the most common form of color blindness. It's just like red and green. If you put them on a spectrum, they look very similar, and grays look pink and green. And like my gray watch band right now, like I've just found out it was gray. I thought it was green.
Wow. That's so interesting.
That's just what it is. It's really boring.
I'll never get bored of you telling me.
It's not even cool at all. It's not even like it's barely affects me at all in daily life. Driving at night. Don't drive with me in a car at night. Or you can drive if we're ever driving in a car at night together.
You don't drive the van when you're on tour?
I do. I'm the sole driver, but I don't tell anybody that I can't tell a red light from a yellow light at night.
You just have to know the order, right?
Well, I mean, a flashing red light and a flashing yellow light are two very different things.
Yeah.
When you're driving at like 40 miles an hour down a road, you're like, oh, am I coming to a complete stop now? Or am I just kind of trying to be cautious while I'm passing by this light? So usually if I have a co-pilot, I wake them up. I'm like, hey, can you tell me if that light is red or yellow? That is the extent of my color blindness. Okay. So like there's nothing, I've never had a problem with it. It's never actually been like a real safety issue for me. That's just a concern I have while driving. I've never had an incident, should we say.
So listeners, if you're ever stuck behind a van full of musician equipment somewhere in the tri-state area at a yellow light completely stopped, it's probably Mike. Don't give him a hard time.
I'm sorry, guys.
Well, the only reason I ask is because he did some like skin correction to Tarkin.
I'm reading that note now. Yeah,
I read some stuff on their website.
Digmod's
Digmod's website. I'll put links to it in the notes. It has some videos there which are kind of cool. Maybe I'll link to their Vimeo page, which has even more kind of cool behind the scenes comparison shots. But their goal was to add back a little bit of yellow,
mm-hmm.
but the reference it looked like he was using from Star Wars.
Really get that jaundice Tarkin in there.
Yeah. I mean, he has like a reference image and then the new image, and side by side, yeah, like it kind of looks wrong. But also, if you look at the uniforms and kind of color grade based on the uniform being gray,
mm-hmm.
looking at the old print where the skin is more yellow, that gray is more green. So it's kind of like the way you see your watch band. It's just it's a little bit off because the whole scene is colored a bit warmer because of the light.
There's no chance I noticed any of what you're talking about right now, but
yeah. So I think if that was the reference, I see what their goal was there, but I don't think it worked, because in the Rogue One scenes, I think like the cooler colors and the darker coloring, it matched the rest of the bodies in the room, for example. And it also kind of hides more of the CGI tells. So the little indications that, yeah, this is not like a real human being. Adding that yellow back, it wasn't like a drastic change. And honestly, like, if I wasn't looking for that particular thing, because I knew that this was something that was in this edit, I may not have noticed it at first, but it definitely did seem different. And I just don't think it worked. I think it's hard to fault him for it, because I think like just watching that scene, you're like, something here just doesn't feel right about the skin. And maybe this was like their way of saying like, okay, this is, I think if you do this, this kind of fixes it. And I think once, you know, I doing like any kind of graphical design, when you think, okay, this is a little off, I think if I do this, it'll fix it. And then you do that and you're like, yeah, that's different than it was before. You're like, oh, that must mean it's like done. It's good. I think that may be like what happened here, but it's still just as weird, except the skin is a little bit more light than before. I don't know. It's hard to explain.
I should watch that. You should definitely link to this stuff so I can see the side by side.
Yeah.
And maybe I'll see something, but I don't really know.
He does have a video of like the, in Rogue One, he has like the original shot side by side with his color correction. So I don't know if you'll be able to see it, but most people should be able to look at that and see what the differences are. Honestly, like it's not terrible. It's a pretty good color correction based on what he wanted to do. But I don't know. I think it could have gone without. I think the real problem in that scene with that character is it's like the fact that the skin is like wet looking. Like it kind of just doesn't look
slimy. It's, yeah, a slimy Tarkin.
And I don't know if they did that to hide some of the CGI or to match the actors in the room, because it looks like the other actors in the room are also a little bit sweaty, but I have no idea. That whole scene is just, it's still very strange. So I can't like fault the editor here, because again, they're working with some really strange source material.
Yeah. Can we follow up from last week really quickly about that? Remember that R2-D2 into the shot? DigMod confirmed that is a composite shot that they created themselves with R2-D2 in the back of that scene, which I thought was really, really impressive. Just kudos. Kudos. Just some top-notch compositing there.
Related, and this can kind of, we can kind of use this to segue into Vader. Mm-hmm. He did a little bit of color correction with Vader's eyes.
Which, like his helmet eyes?
Yeah, his helmet eyes. That's all you see in this movie.
I don't know if it was like, because you kind of see his silhouette in that, I guess a back to tank maybe. I don't know if it's actually a back to tank, yeah, but I assume it is. I don't know if he like added like a weird glow or something into that back to tank that I missed.
No.
What was the color correction in this
one?
Well,
in Rogue One, Vader's eye lenses are pretty noticeably red.
I thought that was a reflection of the lava.
No. I mean, maybe if you look back at like you know, the really old suits, like the original Darth Vader suits for Star Wars, the eyes were actually tinted red. It doesn't show up as much in the original film, but that is actually the tint of the eyes, or they should be. In more recent media, particularly in Rebels, they really have been pushing the red eye thing more. I'm not really sure why. They kind of carried that into Rogue One, and the eyes were probably a little bit more red than they should have been. DigMod really pulled that back. The color correction that they did for this was pretty drastic. It completely desaturated the red. I think a little bit of that saturation put back would have been more authentic, because if you look back at original prints, like you do see in certain lights that there is a red hue to those eye lenses, but in this edit, it's pretty much completely taken out. So if I would have done it my way, I definitely would have pulled it back. Definitely a good call there. It was just way too red, but maybe a bit too much.
Yeah, definitely would never see that with my eyeballs. I mean, it is red on black, like dark red is not a thing. I mean, there wasn't much else cut with the Vader thing, right? I was expecting some major cuts. Well, major being, I was expecting the pun to go away, you know?
Be careful not to choke on your aspirations. director.
Nope, left that. Yeah, I mean, I don't really care anymore.
Vader's a punny bitch, and I'm okay. So I'll be clear. I like the pun. It's fine. My surprise, the reason I took the note about the pun was because I was surprised Digma didn't get rid of it, because a lot of cheese was removed from Force Awakens edit, and a significant amount of cheese was probably also removed from this one as well.
Did we? I don't know if this was mentioned before. Maybe I'm just reading myself, but I think that pun matches more with Anakin's character in episode 3 more than it does with Vader in episode 4.
Which is nice. We need that bridge. We need that we need the missing link between Darth Vader and Anakin Skywalker, and it definitely doesn't come.
It bridges stuff very well. I think it bridges the person's character, even if Darth Vader's voice was even lower in Rogue One.
They couldn't have pitched it up a little bit. Maybe I bet they did.
They may have. I don't know.
Not Digmod. I mean still... the actual Lucasfilm.
Right. No, it's pretty on, like, for most of the scene, but there's like a couple lines where he just like drops to a certain decibel level that's just like a little bit too low. It's just
like
kind of
volume
like
wise or like pitch wise.
No, pitch wise. So like he okay, just so not decibels. I'm a sound idiot.
Frequency.
It's right. It just it's a little too low.
I like it.
What came after that? I don't have like a ton of notes after that.
I didn't notice many edits from then on, really. After Jeddah, I felt like it was kind of just pretty straightforward, you know, looking at the notes that Digmod wrote.
Well, I think that makes sense, because like up to Jeddah, it's supposed to be like a lot of like character building, and if his goal was to change the characters into more heroic figures, everything after Jeddah is them being heroic, so there's much less to edit out. It's interesting. Like, honestly, this movie, like, watching this movie this time really made me appreciate how beautiful it is. Like, that scene where, you know, kind of looking out Saul Guerrero's door towards the oncoming plume of destruction, that is a gorgeous shot. That shot is absolutely stunning.
That's what, I mean, I'll always maintain that about Rogue One, is that, like, it is visually pleasing, and it is, like, action-wise, it has everything I wanted. We'll get to that. But just as far as characters and plot goes, it was not something to, like, really write home about on that. How do you think the movie would have functioned without, if Digmod had removed the Bail Organa and Mon Mothma conversation about, like, going to grab Obi-Wan and, like, how Bail would trust Leia?
Well, I don't know. Why would they remove that?
Okay, imagine it was gone, and you just see Leia get the plans at the end. Is that seems still make like it would make sense to me? And it,
oh yeah, I mean, if you're looking to cut time, like that's a easy thing to drop on the floor, but
or to cut extraneous things like fan servicey stuff, you know, like we don't like what Obi-Wan doesn't matter to this movie. Why do we have to mention him? I think handing the plans off to Princess Leia on that shuttle or on the Corvette would have made just as much sense without Bail explaining that he's going to trust this person. Like it's like the Tarkin thing, you know, like you're just always like the fan has to be familiar with what's going on to really have its effect.
Mm-hmm.
The fan needs to be familiar with it. But I would like to see a movie where the fan doesn't need to be in on it already.
Yeah. No, I see what you're saying. I mean, with that in mind, like, yeah, like that scene doesn't need to be there at all. It's just a way to like to mention some more characters that are familiar to episode 4 and to kind of like cue up that ending. But again, maybe you're right, that ending would be like more surprising and crazier if that wasn't there at all. But I don't know, it didn't bother me, but I see what you're saying. It is kind of extraneous.
There was some editing of the Vader scene at the end where he's hacking up rebels.
Did you notice it when you watched it?
I was looking for something to be changed, because I remember...
What was it that he actually took out? Because it was something super minor.
The note says, trimmed Vader's awkward hand gesture of choking rebel soldier and then motioning to fling him to the side. But then he said, it looks too fan-filmy for me. That was the parentheses there.
Interesting.
which is funny to say because
as a fan editor.
Well, no, because that's what like I kind of thought this whole movie smacked of fan film. Mm. Besides the like the super like ILM effects, you know, like that obviously is separating this movie from anything you can find on YouTube. But yeah, I just think like yeah, there's a lot of like weird like shots in this movie, but.
Yeah, I don't know. I watched it without knowing that he did anything to it, and then after I was putting these notes together, I went back and watched again to see if I could find what was missing, and all of the edits were pretty seamless. I couldn't find that particular like flinging, like where that flinging motion would have been. So, yeah, I mean, it works for me.
Seamless, yeah. Like yeah. I didn't notice it was gone, so it works then. Like I guess it works.
I also didn't notice like any of the color correction that he did to Leia's skin tones. He didn't have like before and after pictures on his website for that particular change, so
yeah,
you know, just going off memory, I couldn't tell you, but it looked fine.
Yeah, and I think that's really it. Like the third act went largely unchanged.
The biggest one I noticed was actually a change in the score. I wondered if you would actually notice this, because like this is actually kind of a big change for the audio of the film, because in Heir to the Force, Digg used a bunch of
Force Unleashed.
Yeah, Force Unleashed, like music, like stuff from the soundtrack, used that in the background, but it was usually in shots that didn't already have a score, or it was something that didn't have, like, you know, like speaking over top, so he was able to just kind of like dub that in. During the Star Destroyer collision, where there is a ton of noise, you know, despite, you know, forgiving the fact that things should not be making noise when they collide in space, there's like a bunch of like scraping metal and explosions and, you know, laser shots, a whole ton of sound effects. And that score kind of like overlaps with scenes of Jin on top of the satellite tower.
Uh-huh.
So there's a whole bunch of noise going on, but they actually kind of like swap the music out. I think the original score that's there is part of the Rogue One score, but I think it's like the main theme, maybe. I'm not entirely sure. But what he did was he actually added in the Rebel theme, Giacchino's Rebel theme. So it's a complete rescore of like the climactic battle of the movie. I didn't think it was as smooth as his additions to Heir of the Force, but I don't think he could have done better, if that makes sense, because there were so many noises on top, but it sounded to me like there were still like artifacts of the old score kind of like surrounding the sound effects that were there. I would love to find out what he actually did to achieve what he did, but I could definitely notice that there was something off about the sound during that particular part of the movie.
I was probably looking for it again, so if I noticed anything, it was only because I was trying to pay attention to it, but it didn't seem offensive to me in any way, you know. Yeah. Like I think I probably enjoyed it more. I don't know, I just think that last act of the movie is like such a strong thing like happening. It's where like I feel like that last act colors a lot of people's perception about the movie. Like when people look back and talk about how Rogue One is one of their favorite Star Wars films, I feel like it's that last act that they're thinking of. They're mm-hmm. reminiscing on the action. Like that those starfighter scenes are like probably just as gratifying as the ones at the end of Return of the Jedi. You know, like I love those starfighter scenes at the end of that movie, and I think these ones are right up there with it. And seeing like the push and pull of the battle, where like the rebels like are on top for a little while at the beginning, and then the Empire starts to, you know, strike back, so to speak, during the battle, and you know the rebels eventually prevail, and that is what I think, and like the image of like Cassian coming back, you know, after you thought he was like gunned down in that big shaft, and the final image of Jin and Cassian dying on the beach, I think is like a super emotional moment for a lot of people, you know, like, mm-hmm. like it's something that could bring a lot of viewers to tears, you know, even though we don't know, like, I think the characterization is pretty weak, and to care that much about characters is a stretch. It's still a really powerful image. You know, these two characters accepting their deaths on a beach, you know, watching the world end around them. It's It's romantic in a weird way. And that's what I think people are taking away from this movie. I think the first two acts are largely useless when once that third act rolls around. It's just like, I could have watched a 35, 40 minute sequence on that last, like it could have been, the film could have been like 40 minutes long and just that last act. And I probably would have just taken as much away from the film as I did. I would have been less angry.
I think you're right. That the last third of that movie is super, super strong. And I think the movie builds in strength as it goes. I think that's what a lot of movies are supposed to do, but some movies definitely fail at. And I think the first section of this movie is super slowly paced. I think this edit helps with that. And then the second, like the mid section of the movie, it doesn't have as much like meat of the story as I would have liked. I think this edit helps with that as well, to kind of like make the characters a little stronger than they were before.
Mm-hmm.
But man, I don't know. Like my feelings on this edit are not as strong as they were for The Force Awakens, but I don't know how much of that has to do with the edit and how much of it has to do with the film, because I love the look of this movie. I love Rogue One. I love like the aesthetic of Rogue One. The story is just so like lacking. I just feel like the characters deserved better. And
yeah,
that's why I kind of like the idea of this edit, because it was, I think the main goal here was to kind of improve those characters and make them stronger and make them more heroic. And in some ways I think it did that, but I think there could be more done, but not with what we were given.
Right. I mean, there's so much of this movie that ended up on the cutting room floor. There is so much of this movie that will never kind of be seen by anybody, you know, like mm-hmm. not even in deleted scenes, like that scene of Jen and the TIE fighter on the tower, you know, like when are we going to see that? It's not in the Blu-ray, right?
Oh, with the TIE fighter that just kind of like rises
yeah.
up and
yeah. Like some action scene that we just miss, you know, I imagine like an X-Wing just shoots it down or something 5 seconds later.
When you think
Jen's going to fight it. But
I was wondering, actually I rewound during that section of the movie because I had to look away for a moment, and I saw like that section of the catwalk like destroyed. I'm like, oh shoot, was that edited back in? I was just kind of curious.
It was not. I would take most of this version of the film over the original. Like
yeah, no, I would probably watch this instead.
I would prefer the crawl at the beginning. I would prefer the pan down. I would prefer getting rid of C-3PO and R2-D2. I would prefer getting rid of Ponda Baba. I would just prefer it to be more independent, but also dependent. It's funny because I'm like, I want it to be independent of the Star Wars franchise, but I want to give it a crawl and opening titles and the Star Wars theme. I want it all, you know, like none of my critique makes sense. I get it. But yeah, I would take this pretty much over the original cut for the most part.
I think so too. It's a strong edit. But, you know, that said, like, there wasn't much to edit to begin with. So I think this one definitely didn't take as long. I mean, if you look at the list of cuts and additions, it's probably a third of the length of Heir to the Force. So, well done. Overall, I'm very happy with it. I thought it was a fun watch. It definitely, like, gave me an opportunity to watch Rogue One in a new light. I don't know why I haven't watched it as much. Like, that's something to maybe investigate. It's something I'll have to contemplate.
It's kind of how I felt about Captain America Civil War. Like, after I saw Spider-Man Homecoming, I just went back and I was like, oh man, I really felt good watching Homecoming. And I just went back mm-hmm. and watched only the Spider-Man scenes from Civil War, and it like, kind of gave me like the fix that I was looking for, just to watch just choice scenes of only the Spider-Man thing. So like, I feel like if I was just watch Rogue One again, I would probably just watch the third act from when they get to Scarif yeah. and on. And I'd be like, okay, that was good. Awesome. That's what I need. Before we go, can I say one more thing that was really awesome that escaped me from the first time we reviewed the film, probably because we hadn't done this. In episode 18, we did a review on the documentary Elstree 1976, mm-hmm. which is a documentary about the extras and the kind of no-line characters from A New Hope and beyond, I guess, if you consider Boba Fett as a part of that documentary. But one of the extras named Angus McInnes, he was a gold leader. Yeah. He flew the Y-Wing.
Red leader, this is gold leader. We're starting our attack run.
On the Death Star trench run. His line in, we kind of highlighted this in our episode 18, which was Angus kind of lamenting over not getting a sequel.
And of course they killed me. Which means no sequel, kid.
And looking at the trivia for this movie, and kind of the Wikipedia entry for this character in the Star Wars universe, Angus McInnes actually went back. He got his sequel. Like he did, he re-recorded lines for Rogue One.
Oh, he actually came in and did that? Or I thought they were just using old archive stuff.
Well, they definitely repurposed footage, but there's some other stuff that like didn't make sense. I don't know. Maybe, who knows? I guess maybe this is the old adage of don't believe Wikipedia all the time, or like Wikipedia in this case. But I mean, his character thing says Angus McInnes came in and re-recorded some dialogue for the film, because they have the shot of him, which is definitely repurposed from A New Hope with him talking with like the sound from that. But then there's a radio frequent like calm message, and I was like, that sounds like Angus McInnes, but I don't remember hearing that sound bite from A New Hope. So it kind of made me happy. And even if he didn't come back and record dialogue, I felt like this is the sequel, you know, probably that he deserved. I mean, as an extra, because like my whole point during that review of that documentary was that Angus McInnes, like he served his function as an extra in that film. He went in there, died, showed the stakes, and there's really like, why would I get that you want a sequel, but that character is done, you know, like that character needed to die. That's who you were cast as. So, but he got it. He got another film, you know, and I was psyched for that.
Well, good for him.
Yeah, totally.
I doubt that's going to make him any like less grumpy than he was in that documentary, but He seemed the most jaded of all of them.
Yeah, definitely he did. Everybody else was very enthusiastic. He was bitter. He was bitter, but it's okay. I'm glad he got it. Do you have anything else you want to add, Jacob?
No, I mean, this was fun. I'm looking forward to talking to Digmod. We're going to have to put some work in to put in some, to ask some questions. So anybody listening to this, if you have any questions about these edits in particular, or, you know, just like the struggles that people have in editing these films in general, I think
questions on how to get started, where we'd love to talk to Digmod about that kind of stuff as well. I guess frustrations, like you said.
Yeah, frustrations, limitations, software. I know that Digmod was using some new software that he had not used before for this, so that's the kind of nerdy stuff that I'm going to be into. But yeah, any questions, send them our way. You can shoot it to us on Twitter at BanthaFodderFM, or we do have an email account set up, so BanthaFodderFM@gmail.com. We'll get it that way.
Yep, you can find me at Mike Comite on Twitter, and Jacob, you're at Jacob Tender. Our website's BanthaFodder.fm.
And it's really good. It really is a good website. I mean, I'm not trying to like toot my own horn or anything, but it is a good website. There's fun stuff on there. The canon timeline is not completely up to date. I'm still working on a more interactive version of that someday, I promise.
What is the canon timeline, just for anybody listening who is not familiar with it?
So if you do go to the BanthaFodder.fm website and go to our projects section in our menu, there's a drop down. There's a couple of things in there. It's where you can go find like our music, our lookbook, which is actually kind of a cool way to, if you're new to the show, you can go through and find episodes based on topics that you're interested in. We kind of just put all the images up there for every episode and just a very brief synopsis of what Mike and I talk about each time. So you can kind of use that as a utility for that. The next option is the canon timeline. And if you click that, there is a very, very basic timeline of events starting at the year negative 10, which is the year that Anakin Skywalker was born, going up to episode 1, which is where the new canon timeline starts at 0. And it kind of just gives you an idea of the movies, the television shows, the books, the comics, video games, where all of these fall on the timeline. So you can kind of see where these things overlap year to year. It's sort of a cool way to kind of put things into perspective. So you can kind of see like, okay, I did watch the Clone Wars. I'm not really sure what happened to Ahsoka after that. When does the book about Ahsoka take place? You can see that Clone Wars ends in year 12 and the Ahsoka novel takes place in year 14. I don't update this nearly as often as I should. I'm going to do it as soon as I know when all of the new books for The Last Jedi took place. But it's just kind of a neat little thing here. I'll put a link to it in the show notes as well. So check that out. That's fun. What else? Oh, yeah. Just a quick thing. I put this on my own Twitter, but while I've been watching all these fan edits with Mike, I did download some different ones. I'm not sure we'll talk about on the show. They're the Star Wars Revisited projects by
I want to do those.
Do you?
Yeah, I do.
I'd be
do
down.
Those.
Okay. Yeah. I'd be down for this. So there is a fan editor named Addy1 who did a Star Wars Revisited edit a couple of years ago. I think that came out in like 2015. They worked on it for a really long time, but it came out in 2015 or so. They just dropped Empire Strikes Back. And I noticed that there was no good artwork for these. Mike and I are using Plex to watch a lot of these movies. I have a server set up and Mike kind of leeches off of my server remotely, but I'm really into metadata and making sure everything looks pretty. So I did make some posters. That's under the project things on the website as well. Projects, additional media, and you can grab yourself some cool posters if you happen to have those edits in your own Plex server. So you can check that out.
I'm a leech.
I'm totally fine with it. I'm happy to share.
I prefer to be a lamprey. You know that about me.
you're one of those things in an Empire that's clinging to the side of the hull on the asteroid. What are those things called?
Minox.
Minox. Yeah, you're a Minox to my Plex server.
Do you know, I have to, like, there are a lot of things in life that I get startled by, and like amongst those are toasters, small mice, and also the Minox scene from Empire Strikes Back. That also is extremely traumatizing to me. So I usually have to leave the room when that scene is happening. Or like put it on mute or something like that. It's startling seeing that thing fly against the windshield. Space shield? I don't know. All right, that's it for us. We gotta go. But hopefully we come back with a Digmod interview. Yeah. And if not, if Digmod just uses a do print, we can do, we'll post it on the website and we'll make it known. Okay?
Absolutely.
Bye. All right. Thanks, everybody. We will see you next time.
See ya.
Bye.
Bye.
So what's the word? Sorry. I think there should be more of casting being incompassionate. Is that a word? Is it non-compassionate? Hold on, I gotta look this up because I got the.
I'm gonna send you a dictionary for Christmas.
Oh, thank you. I'm such an idiot. Uncompassionate? What the? Is that a word?
This is gonna be a great. It's in the dictionary. Post-game bumper.
Oh, god damn it! Anyway, he lacks compassion.